One member of a virtual particle pair will have positive energy and the other negative energy. When a black hole is present, the negative energy member can fall in and the positive energy member can escape to infinity, where it appears as radiation that carries positive energy away from the black hole. The negative energy particles falling in cause the black hole to lose mass and to evaporate slowly, with its horizon shrinking in size. Ordinary matter with positive energy density has an attractive gravitational effect and warps space-time to bend light rays toward each other, just as the ball on the rubber sheet in Chapter 2 always makes the smaller ball bearings curve toward it, never away. This would imply that the area of the horizon of a black hole could only increase with time, never shrink. For the horizon of a black hole to shrink in size, the energy density on the horizon must be negative and warp space-time to make light rays diverge from each other. This was something I first realized when I was getting into bed soon after the birth of my daughter. I won't say how long ago that was, but I now have a grandson. The evaporation of black holes shows that on the quantum level, the energy density can sometimes be negative and warp space-time in the direction that would be needed to build a time machine. Thus, we might imagine that some very advanced civilization could arrange things so that the energy density is sufficiently negative to form a time machine that could be used by macroscopic objects, such as spaceships. However, there's an important difference between a black hole horizon, which is formed by light rays that just keep going, and the horizon in a time machine, which contains closed light rays that keep going around and around. A virtual particle moving on such a closed path will bring its ground state energy back to the same point again and again. One would therefore expect the energy density to be infinite on the horizon, the boundary of the time machine, the region in which one can travel into the past. This is borne out by explicit calculations in a few backgrounds that are simple enough for exact calculations. It would mean that a person or a space probe that tried to cross the horizon to get into the time machine would get wiped out by a bolt of radiation. So the future looks black for time travel, or should one say, blindingly white. The energy density of matter depends on the state it is in, so it is possible that an advanced civilization might be able to make the energy density finite on the boundary of the time machine by freezing out or removing the virtual particles that go around and around in a closed loop. It's not clear, however, that such a time machine would be stable. The least disturbance, such as someone crossing the horizon to enter the time machine, might set off circulating virtual particles and trigger a bolt of lightning. This is a question that physicists should be free to discuss without being laughed to scorn. Even if it turns out that time travel is impossible, it's important that we understand why it is impossible. To answer that question definitely, we need to consider quantum fluctuations, not only of matter fields, but of space-time itself. One might expect that these would cause a certain fuzziness in the paths of light rays and in the whole concept of time ordering. Indeed, one can regard the radiation from black holes as leaking out because quantum fluctuations of space-time mean that the horizon is not exactly defined. Because we don't yet have a complete theory of quantum gravity, it's difficult to say what the effects of space-time fluctuation should be. Nevertheless, we can hope to get some pointers from the Feynman sum over histories described in Chapter 3. Each history will be a curved space-time with matter fields in it. Since we're supposed to sum over all possible histories, not just those that satisfy some equations, the sum must include space-times that are warped enough for travel into the past. So the question is, why isn't time travel happening everywhere? The answer is that time travel is indeed taking place on a microscopic scale, but we don't notice it. If one applies the Feynman sum over histories idea to a particle, one has to include histories in which the particle travels faster than light and even backward in time. In particular, there will be histories in which the particle goes around and around on a closed loop in time and space. It will be like the film Groundhog Day, in which a reporter has to live the same day over and over again. One can't observe particles with such closed-loop histories directly with a particle detector. However, their indirect effects have been measured in a number of experiments. One is a small shift in the light given out by hydrogen atoms, caused by electrons moving in closed loops. Another is a small force between parallel metal plates, caused by the fact that there are slightly fewer closed-loop histories that can fit between the plates, compared to the region outside. Another equivalent interpretation of the Casimir effect. Thus, the existence of closed-loop histories is confirmed by experiment. One might dispute whether closed-loop particle histories have anything to do with the warping of space-time, because they occur even in fixed backgrounds such as flat space. But in recent years, we've found that phenomena in physics often have dual, equally valid descriptions. One can equally well say that a particle moves on a closed loop in a given fixed background, or that the particle stays fixed, and space and time fluctuate around it. It's just a question of whether you do the sum over particle paths first, and then the sum over curved spacetimes, or vice versa. It seems, therefore, that quantum theory allows time travel on a microscopic scale. However, this is not much use for science fiction purposes, such as going back and killing your grandfather. The question, therefore, is, can the probability in the sum over histories be peaked around spacetimes with macroscopic time loops? One can investigate this question by studying the sum over histories of matter fields in a series of background spacetimes that get closer and closer to admitting time loops. One would expect something dramatic to happen when time loops first appear, and this is borne out in a simple example that I studied with my student Michael Cassidy. The background spacetimes in the series we studied were closely related to what is called the Einstein universe, the spacetime that Einstein proposed when he believed that the universe was static and unchanging in time, neither expanding nor contracting. See Chapter 1. In the Einstein universe, time runs from the infinite past to the infinite future. The space directions, however, are finite and close on themselves, like the surface of the Earth, but with one more dimension. One can picture this space-time as a cylinder with the long axis being the time direction and the cross-section being the three space directions. The Einstein universe doesn't represent the universe we live in because it's not expanding. Nevertheless, it is a convenient background to use when discussing time travel, because it's simple enough that one can do the sum over histories. Forgetting about time travel for a moment, consider matter in an Einstein universe that is rotating about some axis. If you were on the axis, you could remain at the same point of space, just as you do when standing at the center of a children's carousel. But if you were not on the axis, you would be moving through space as you rotate it about the axis. The further you were from the axis, the faster you would be moving. So if the universe were infinite in space, points sufficiently far from the axis would have to be rotating faster than light. However, because the Einstein universe is finite in the space directions, there is a critical rate of rotation below which no part of the universe is rotating faster than light. Now consider the sum over particle histories in a rotating Einstein universe. When the rotation is slow, there are many paths a particle can take using a given amount of energy. Thus, the sum over all particle histories in this background gives a large amplitude. This means that the probability of this background would be high in the sum over all curved spacetime histories. That is, it's among the more probable histories. However, as the rate of rotation of the Einstein universe approaches the critical value, so that its outer edges are moving at a speed approaching the speed of light, there is only one particle path that is classically allowed on that edge, namely, one that is moving at the speed of light. This means that the sum over particle histories will be small. Thus, the probability of these backgrounds will be low in the sum over all curved spacetime histories. That is, they are the least probable. What do rotating Einstein universes have to do with time travel and time loops? The answer is that they're mathematically equivalent to other backgrounds that do admit time loops. These other backgrounds are universes that are expanding in two space directions. The universes are not expanding in the third space direction, which is periodic. That is to say, if you go a certain distance in this direction, you get back to where you started. However, each time you do a circuit of the third space direction, your speed in the first or second directions gets boosted. If the boost is small, there are no time loops. However, consider a sequence of backgrounds with increasing boosts in speed. At a certain critical boost, time loops will appear. Not surprisingly, this critical boost corresponds to the critical rate of rotation of the Einstein universes. Since the sum over history's calculations in these backgrounds are mathematically equivalent, one can conclude that the probability of these backgrounds goes to zero as they approach the warping needed for time loops. In other words, the probability of having sufficient warping for a time machine is zero. This supports what I've called the chronology protection conjecture, mentioned at the end of Chapter 2, that the laws of physics conspire to prevent time travel by macroscopic objects. Although time loops are allowed by the sum over histories, the probabilities are extremely small. Based on the duality arguments I mentioned earlier, I estimate the probability that Kip Thorne could go back and kill his grandfather as less than 1 in 10 with a trillion, 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 trillion zeros after it. As gambling men, Kip and I would bet on odds like that. The trouble is, we can't bet each other because we're now both on the same side. On the other hand, I wouldn't take a bet with anyone else. He might be from the future and know that time travel worked. You might wonder if this chapter is part of a government cover-up on time travel. You might be right.